Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series.
You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Watch Hacks, streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Look out! It's only films to be buried with
Judgment Day.
Hello, and welcome to Films to be Buried with Judgment Day. My name is Brett Goldstein. I'm a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, a groupie, and I love films. As Marcus Tullus Cicero once said, life is nothing without friends, and cinema is now without popcorn. That's the true joy of film watching. Now it is it? Okay, fair enough. Yeah, I can see it. Every week I invite a special guest over, I tell them they've died, then I get them to discuss their life through the films that meant the most to them. But not today! Today is Judgment Day. The world has ended, and Ed Gamble stands before me. He has one chance to prove why I should send him to heaven and not hell. What will happen? Well, you'll find out in a minute. Check out the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where you get an extra 20 minutes with Ed. We talk about secrets. He tells me some stuff he shouldn't say. There's many more things. You get the whole episode uncut and ad-free and as a video. Check it out over at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. So, Paired Lambles, you know him, you love him, I do too. He's a podcaster, he's a TV star, he's a stand-up, he's an actor, he's a writer, and he's a lovely boy. And I was delighted to finally get him on the show, as he was always asking to be on it, and I thought, yeah, you know what, it's about time. You know him, what else do you need to know? We recorded this, he was in Edinburgh, I was here, we did it on a Zoom. Oh, we had a right old time. I think you're going to love it. So that is it for now. I very much hope you enjoy episode 212 of Films to be Buried with Judgment Day. Hello, and welcome to Films to be Buried with Judgment Day. It is me, Brett Goldstein, and I'm joined today by an actor, star of Ted Lasso, a writer, a stand-up, a panelist, a sitcommer, a heavy metaler, a man who loves food and talking about it a lot, and a man who wouldn't say no to a podcast if it asked. He is one of the greats. I love him with all my heart. He's a lovely boy, big strong boy. He's very fit. Very fit, big strong boy. Very handsome man, and also wonderful, wonderful sense of humour. Please welcome back to the show for the third time. It's an honour to have him back. Here he is. Can you believe it? It's Mr. Ed Gamble.
Hooray. Now, Brett, sometimes I listen to this podcast a lot. Sometimes it feels like you've written those intros in advance to make sure you nail them. On this occasion, very much felt like you were riffing it. Is
no,
that fair?
I spent last night. That is a word for word what I wrote over the weekend. That was the third draft.
Yeah, I mean, you must have written little reminders for yourself all around the room, because that's where you were looking when you were desperately trying to reach for something. Sitcomma.
Big strong boy.
Big strong boy. Very handsome. Nice big strong boy.
Famously a big strong boy. Probably what you're most known for.
Yeah, lifting stuff.
Yeah, some of your greatest work is that body of yours. That's what people say.
They're all saying it.
Now, where are you? For those of you who can see the video, what it looks like is Ed is in a dungeon?
It looks like I'm in some magical cave of delights, but I'm in Edinburgh. I'm at the Edinburgh Festival, Brett, in a hotel where I'm staying, because I'm that guy now. I come and do a show at the Edinburgh Festival, and I book a hotel.
I love it. I love it. You finally worked out how to do the Edinburgh Festival. That's like do 1 week in a fancy hotel.
Yeah. I finally worked out how to somehow lose more money than I used to when nobody came to my shows.
Oh, man. I'm jealous. I miss Edinburgh. Do I? Yeah.
No, you just, well, you miss everything that you're not doing right now at this moment, right?
Right. Yeah.
That's what you're like. You're filming the most successful sitcom in history and you're going, oh God, I wish I was doing Always Be Comedy in Kennington.
I wish I was at King's Cross in an underground venue playing to four disinterested tourists.
I wish I was doing the Wednesday after the 2-for-1 days at the Edinburgh Festival in the Pleasance Beneath. Please, why am I not doing that?
Please, Mervyn Stutter, put me on. Hit me. yeah, it's true. Now.
Oh, you went really sad. You went really sad then, Brett.
Yeah, I was taken back to Mervyn Stutter gigs. Like, yeah, no, that's hard, actually. And then I was like, no, I don't miss Edinburgh.
You don't miss it at all. Of course you don't.
No, it's really hard, actually, and I wish everyone is there well. Lots of luck, and I hope they hang on to your mental health, because you're really going to need it. I mean, I'm mad, but I've never been madder than I am in Edinburgh.
That is the real peak madness for everyone, I think. Sort of second week, halfway through the second week is when everyone hits absolute insanity.
I've been thinking about it because I was talking to Goose. You know, Goose.
Goose.
And I was like, hello, Goose.
You were talking to a Goose?
You really
had gone mad, Brett.
I was talking to Goose, who's doing Edinburgh, and he's not having a day off in the middle. And I think that's wise. I think the day off fucks you. As soon as you have a moment of like, oh, what am I doing? Then you've lost it. Second half of the festival's over, you're fucked.
Yeah, you've got to plow through. That's what I've always done. And then don't do the last Monday. Although I've done that before. I've had, you know, gone through no day off and then done the last Monday and I've just been an absolute husk.
Yeah. I got to the stage when I would do last Monday, but I'd hand out tequila shots to the audience when they came in. Just give it a different vibe. And what you also always remembered is like going, oh, I should have done this at every show. It really does help.
Yeah, but that feels a bit cheap, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Going, right, what am I going to talk about this year? Well, first things first, I'll give the audience tequila and then I'll work out the rest of the show on the night.
Yeah, and then I'll just riff and we'll be fine.
You should do that, man. That should be next year's Fringe. You should come and do the whole run and just call it Brett Goldstein's Tequila Riff.
Not a bad idea. That's not a bad idea, Ed. Okay.
Ed Gamble, you have died again because... Oh. It is Judgment Day. You stand on the edge of heaven and hell. So, you must tell me the best and worst thing that you did in your life. And also answer some questions about film. In the end, I will decide whether you go to heaven or hell. Understood?
Yes, understood, Brett. Thank you.
Simple, clear concept. Go on then. Tell us the best and worst thing you did in your life. And by the way, I've done this once with Jame Acaster. Jame, I don't know two of them. There's only one Jame. And he did this appallingly. I was disgusted by his answers. They were pathetic. They were like, oh, I made a pasta and I made a cheese roll. It's like, come on, mate. I'm asking you the best and worst thing you did in your life. And I think you're going to take this more seriously.
Yeah. Did he mention chorizo broccoli pasta, did he?
I think he did, yeah.
Yeah. Well.
And maybe that's it. You know, who am I to judge? But it is Judgment Day and I judged him and I don't think that's true.
I mean, he's not done a lot of great stuff, though, to be fair to that guy.
Yeah, he's done so many worse things. I thought he could at least handle that side of it.
I did a shit off my neighbour's shed roof once.
Okay.
Is that allowed as a... Which one do you think that would be, good or bad?
Depends how you feel about your neighbour and what your neighbour had done.
No, I was hanging out with my neighbour.
Oh, you were
on his
the
shed
neighbor.
Roof. Yeah, I was with the neighbour. I was quite young and so was he. And I can't remember. Did I give this as my secret last time? I can't remember.
I think you did, yeah.
Oh, no. I've got nothing, Brett. I've done nothing good and nothing bad. I operate in completely the middle of the road for my entire life.
absolute lies. Lies. It's a very simple concept. Just tell me the worst thing you've ever done that keeps you awake at night for the public.
But this says more about you than it does about me, Brett. You want to know bad things that other people have done that keep them awake at night so you can sleep easier.
But I also want to know the things that they're most proud of. It's a wonderful thing.
I got married. That's the best thing I ever did.
That's a really nice answer, actually.
Yeah. I'm not trying to be funny here.
No, and I appreciate that.
It's the best thing I ever did.
Worst thing I ever did.
I frequently cheat on my wife.
Thank you. You hear that, James? That's how you do it.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
That's a really lovely answer, both sides. On your wedding day, did you feel this is the best day of my life?
I think there's a lot of pressure on you to feel that. And when there's a lot of pressure on you to feel that, you're constantly self-examining and going, is this the best day of my life? And what is making it the best day of my life? And is this a new feeling because it's the best day of my life? And then about halfway through, I just relaxed and had a really lovely time. And now I look back on it, it definitely was the best day of my life. But the first half of it, I was completely consumed by self-doubt and worry that it wasn't the best day of my life and what the hell was wrong with me.
Yeah, that's how I imagine it. I like that. Yeah. I mean, you know. I'm happy
you would have to imagine it, mate, because you didn't come.
Yeah, and I really wanted to. And I hope you understand that some things take precedent, like...
Los Angeles.
Yeah, but...
Brett, you've gone sad again.
That's the worst thing.
You're the host of this podcast. You need to maintain your own levels of energy and excitement, okay? You can't keep going sad every time I say something.
I think you keep hitting me real, and I'm like, yeah, fuck. This is what Off Menu's like. Right. I've listened to it. Someone will say, oh, I like a banana cake, and you'll go, that your mum made you. But she's not here anymore, is she?
Yeah. Do you like your dead mum's banana cake?
You'll never have that again, will you? You'll never have it quite the same way. Anyway, we've been Off Menu. I'm Ed and he's a genie. Your mum's dead. Good night.
That's exactly what it is. Yeah. God, you listen to it a lot.
So, hang on. Okay, yeah, no. Okay, all right. Well, I'm still not sure whether you're going to go to heaven and hell based on those answers, so I guess I'm going to have to ask you some film questions. I
think so.
What's the film you saw when you were too young to see it that affected you the most?
Total Recall.
Yes.
I love it, obviously, but I somehow laid my hands on a VHS copy of Total Recall. Very excited that it was an 18. I probably saw it when I was maybe 12, around that age. And there's things in that film that have really stuck with me as images throughout my life. And they've definitely affected me.
Which images? I think I feel similarly about Total Recall.
Well, there's three main images that have stuck with me from Total Recall. There's... I think it's more of like a premonition, isn't it? When he goes outside in Mars and then his helmet smashes and then his eyes go all googly and he screams.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I love a Schwarzenegger scream is one of my favorites. Yeah! And then his eyes all pop out. Absolutely love that. That's really stuck with me. I'm leaving the most obvious one to the end here because I think we all know what it is. There's when he's in disguise as the big lady and the face like unlocks. Yeah. It's brilliant. I think that's absolute genius. That's really stuck with me. And then three tits.
I'd add Gun Up the Nose.
Gun Up the Nose is such a good
show. Gun Up the Nose
shout.
Really stayed with me. That really horror.
Yeah, that film's amazing, isn't it?
Horrible. I love Total Recall, but I never understood it. And I still don't understand it.
What don't you understand, man?
I don't get it. I think I don't even understand the concept. He goes to a clinic and says, implant a memory of holiday.
Yeah.
And then he suddenly wakes up and he's in Mars and he's someone else. And then in the end, he says, it was all a dream or something. I'm like, what the fuck?
Well, I think he goes to have that thing done and then that unlocks his actual memory.
Right.
I mean, I've not seen it in a while. I think the last time I saw the remake, which really just put me off the whole thing, to be honest. But I think it faffs with him and he turns out he was that guy anyway. It goes mad, doesn't it? But I love it. I love all that dream stuff where you don't quite know where you are. I'm thick. I just let it all wash over me.
Great answer, and I really related. Thank you.
Thank you.
If you could play one character in a film, which one would it be? And who?
Hercules.
In Hercules in New York.
Hercules in the new Thor film. No, I wouldn't play Hercules. I mean, imagine being so arrogant to take that part. I'd love to play a lovely villain.
Imagine being such a big strong boy. You'd love to play a villain. Go on.
I'd love to play a lovely villain, but I think I'm too cheeky. But if this is my dream casting, Jafar. I know we should be avoiding whitewashing in Hollywood,
issues.
But I think he's one of the best villains of all time. And I'd love to play Jafar. Thank you, Brett.
Thank you, Ed. No further questions.
You have to deal with the backlash, okay?
Okay. You're playing Jafar as live action, as you.
I'm me, live action in the animation.
In the animation. And I have to ask, I don't want to ask, but I have to ask, are you wearing any kind of makeup for this?
No, God, no.
Right, okay.
I just like the character of Jafar is excellent.
So you're playing Jafar as, you're doing an accent?
Yeah, but like a posh accent. I mean, that's what he does really, isn't it?
Right,
like he does sort of a posh English accent, which is a baddie's voice. So I'll do baddie's voice.
Yeah, that's the part we've got you in Ted Lasso.
Yes.
William McBushington.
You know people believe you when you say stuff like that.
I know, and they're right too. It's one of the main arcs of the series.
I can't think of a better... I mean, Disney villains are obviously amazing. There's some incredible ones, but I think Jafar is the best of the best, villain-wise.
Why is he your favourite?
Because he's just evil, isn't he? I don't think there's no attempt to give him any redeeming features. He's even evil to that poor parrot.
He's
haughty. He's arch. Yes, I love how tall and thin he is. I love his staff.
Mm.
I love him. I just love him. I think he's sexy.
He is sexy. So you like a villain who doesn't have a kind of reason, as in from his point of view, it's like, oh no, he's just a bad motherfucker.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, sure, I love layers and nuance, and oh, now we can really empathize with the villain. But I think people have forgotten, just why not just have some mad cunts and stuff.
Yeah, well, because you're right. I mean, I guess you're right. You're right on this one. But, like, I love Hunchback of Notre Dame, Disney's Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Sure.
But the villain is, you know, I mean, of course, he's sexually obsessed with a gypsy and he thinks he's going to go to hell for it. I mean, that's...
Yeah. Of course you love that. Yeah, that is complicated stuff. But I just think sometimes things don't need to be complicated, Brett. You know, when Heath Ledger's
Joker... That's you, innit? That's you all over, right? Innit?
When Heath Ledger's Joker came out, everyone was like, oh, it's so good. He's like, he just wants to watch the world burn. That's so interesting. It's like, no, all the villains in like 80s films were that. They're just mad and they're, you know, money obsessed and they just want to blow stuff up. Why can't we just have a fun character who says mad stuff, who is basically a vehicle for blowing things up? Yeah, who's just mad.
Yeah, okay. I like it. You can be Jafar and I don't see any issue with it. Okay.
We can change the name. We can change his name to like Jonathan or something.
Aladdin, yeah, all right. So Jonathan's moved. Are we setting that moving the whole of Aladdin?
No, is he absolutely not? No, it's in right. It's in wherever it's set. Sort of vague Arabia, I think is.
Yeah,
it's
in Arabia, and you're.
Yeah. I'm Jonathan. Who's there on a gap year?
And he's just mad.
And he's just a mad guy on a gap year.
Have you met Jonathan? He's just mad.
And instead of a parrot, I've got a pigeon.
It's really good, actually.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
Thank you. Thank you. What is the worst date or time you ever had at a film?
Okay, Brett. Now, this is going to upset you, but I've been waiting to have this argument with you for a long time.
Right.
And it's not related to my company or the time necessarily that I went to this film. It's all about the film itself, and the answer is Annette. It's one of the worst films I've ever seen in my life, and I know you love it, and I can't believe it.
You went to see Annette at the cinema?
Went to see Annette at the cinema. It was the day after my wedding.
That's really the best day of your life. So you followed the best day of your life.
Best day of my life with the worst film I've ever seen. And I couldn't... My wife is a huge fan of Sparks, so she was absolutely desperate to see this film. And I am now a huge fan of Sparks as well. I think their music's great. I love the Edgar Wright documentary about them. I think it's fantastic. Yeah. So we went to see this film in a little cinema in a place where we were staying the day after our wedding. I was obviously hungover, fine. I will.
Yeah.
I'll give them that I was hungover and not necessarily in the best mood for a film.
Yeah.
But it started so well. That opening song in Annette is absolutely brilliant. And then it goes off a fucking cliff, that film. It is so deliberately, it's deliberately weird. It thinks it's so cool. Adam Driver thinks he's so cool and he's boring. I was watching that and I was just thinking, imagine hanging out with this guy.
Oh yeah, and his stand-up is arguably not stand-up.
It's one of the worst. I know it's not supposed to be like a straight stand-up show or whatever, but it is still one of the worst stand-up scenes in any film or television or history.
Yeah, what is weird is in the credits it's like, thanks to, I think it's like Bill Burr and Chris Rock like helped out with the Adam Driver with it, but I'm like, he's not doing stand-up. It doesn't seem to be stand-up. Like, I didn't mind it. As in, I was like, well, you're not doing stand-up. This is something, I don't know what you're doing, but it isn't stand-up.
It's, well, if Bill Burr and Chris Rock helped out with that, then they were absolutely trolling the hell out of Adam Driver. They're like, yeah, then we do this. That's my impression of both of them melded together.
It's really good.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. I would also argue, if we're going to have this argument, I don't think it thinks it's cool.
It does, mate. What?
I think it's being, I never know what the word is, but is the word camp? Like, it's like a bit, it's sort of deliberately a bit shit. Like, as in, it doesn't look real, nothing in it looks real. They're on a boat, but they're not on a boat. It's all very extreme. I don't think it's cool.
I guess theatrical would be theatrical. The word, because it, you know, it sort of looks almost like a stage production sometimes. But just the tone in which the whole film's delivered and the fact they're using a puppet and the whole thing just really sat with me awfully. Just something about the tone.
The puppet's so good.
The puppet's not good.
You know I love a puppet. Also, are you telling me the worst film you've ever seen has Adam Driver singing into Marianne Cotillard's vagina? You can't.
By that point, I was like...
That can't be in your worst film. Just for that moment alone.
It is. I didn't even fall asleep. I was willing myself to fall asleep and I just couldn't. At one point, Charlie went to the toilet and then came back about 5 minutes later and I had to explain to her everything that had happened and I just got bored halfway through explaining it.
What do you say? He's got the... You know the geezer out of Big Bang Theory? He's just sort of pushed him in a pool for some reason. He's pushed the geezer from Big Bang Theory. He's now in the sort of being drowned in the pool because he's trying to make the baby sing a song or something.
Yeah. Anyway, he's just yelled in her fanny.
He's using her fanny as a megaphone again. What did Charlie hate it as well? Your wife?
No, I think she liked it more than me. She did like it more than me, and also just found it hilarious how much I hated it. So I think deliberately started talking about how good it was just to get on my nerves even more.
It's really good. I stand by it. And I'm
I'm
glad that was your honeymoon. If you could live in the world of one film, which film would it be?
The Truman Show.
Really? What are you, crazy?
Here's what I think, Brett. I think that guy really looks a gift horse in the mouth. I think he's got a lovely life. And then he finds out that it's all set up for him. Mm. And then all he wants to do is escape.
It's a fucking
Why would you
point.
Do that? If I found out that my life had been set up to be lovely for me and it was being filmed and shown to everyone, I'd absolutely just keep quiet about it and just get on with my lovely life.
Wow. That's nice. A hot take.
That's really
a hot
nice.
Take. Yeah. What's he? We don't see what happens when he gets out, but he's probably like, oh, fucking hell, I'm getting... This is a nightmare. I've got to fucking get a new gas bill and stuff. Like,
yeah, exactly. The admin, the serious admin that he'd have to go through to get out. Where's he going to live? Right, he's got
identity.
A nice house.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh my God, I never thought about that.
Be happy with what you've got, I think, should be the message of Truman Show. Truman Show 2 should just be him back in the Truman Show.
Him banging on the door of the studio. Yeah. Let me back. I'm so sorry.
Exactly.
I didn't realise I'd have to pay mortgages. This is awful. I have no actual skills. Let me back in.
I'd love it.
That's a really hot take. So if you found out your world was a TV show, which it could be, and I'm not saying anything. I'm not saying.
Yeah.
I can't, not for me to say if it is or it isn't.
Sure, sure. Wink.
Would you try and sort of sneak some, like, it'd be great if this sort of thing happened. Like some story notes. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe. Well, first off, if I found out I was the lead in a TV show and this was all created for me, I'd be very happy for the acting work, you know?
Yeah.
It's whether I'd put my own life on my CV. Because I don't know if they'd be able to take that as a... Because they'd all be acting within the same show.
Yeah. Oh, so you'd be trying to be an actor in the Ed Gamble show?
Yeah, I'd probably... To get other parts within the Ed Gamble show, I'd put the Ed Gamble show on the... on my CV.
Yeah, if I was an actor in the Ed Gamble show, I'd probably set up a production company within the show to try and make other things, because I think I'd be like, I don't know what, it's quite boring, this show. There's a lot of like sitting, he just sits around.
Yeah, we don't see each other a lot, I guess. Around.
Yeah.
Also, it's annoying that if this is the Ed Gamble show, you're getting way more work than me within my own show.
Within this show.
Yeah.
Well, that's part of... I think we found that your low self-esteem tested highly. So they wanted to keep it that way.
So you just have to give my friends like loads of like, Hollywood film work and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. It's good. It's good stuff for the audience. They like, because it gives you somewhere to go and stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. No, I'm happy with that. I mean, you know, a lot's happened in the Ed Gamble show. There was the shit off the roof. There was a wedding.
That tested very high. That went out at Christmas, that episode. They held on to that.
But I genuinely believe that. I think he's really pathetic for wanting to get out of that. Why do you always want something that you can't see? Just enjoy your lovely life. He goes out of his house every morning. People say, "Good morning, Truman." It sounds lovely.
Yeah. Well, I mean, genuinely, I've never heard anyone talk about that. That's huge. And I think it's a really good point. And I would like to have seen what happened when he got out of the studio.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he needs a bank account. You know what I mean? Like he needs a passport. It's a nightmare.
Yeah, it would have been an absolute nightmare. And it won't be a good film when he gets out. It'll be really depressing.
Yeah. He's really famous and he doesn't have anywhere to go. So everyone's like, holy shit. There's Truman from the Truman Show just wandering around. But he's like, I don't know where to go. I've never even seen a map.
He'd be in like a BuzzFeed article in 2 years' time being like, you'll never guess what Truman's doing now. And it'd be him like working on a road somewhere.
Yeah. And there'd be lots of like TMZ updates of Truman.
Yeah.
And he'd just go, leave me alone. It's so cold.
It's actually not a bad idea for a film, Brett. Write that down.
Okay. Thank you. What is your favourite children's film?
Struggled slightly with this one because are we saying that like Pixar are children's films? Because the majority of people who love Pixar, as far as I'm concerned, are adults. Especially like there's some strands of Pixar films that I think adults enjoy more than children. Mm-hmm. Like the sad ones, like Coco and
they're all sad.
Soul and stuff like that. But the ones that are now where they've realised they're sad and they go all out for the sadness. And Yeah, I know they're all sad, but now I think they're absolutely just swinging for it every time, and they try and make them profound from the start. They don't start with the characters, they start with a profound statement and then they build the characters around it. So I don't think those, personally, I wouldn't call those kids films. So I'll just say Mighty Ducks.
Have you watched the Mighty Ducks Redux or whatever it's called, the TV show?
I've watched a bit of the TV show. I was enjoying it, but I fell away from it for some reason. But the original Mighty Ducks film is an absolute masterpiece.
Yeah,
it's the best ensemble kids cast, and I know School of Rock, you could say, you know, that's probably the best ensemble kids cast, but I think Mighty Ducks doesn't get a look in that conversation enough. I think it's absolutely fantastic. Emilio Estevez, what a hero. Yeah.
What a hero.
It brought us the insult cake eater, which I still don't understand, but I still use on a regular basis.
Mate, no, but that seems like an insult aimed at diabetics, I'd have thought.
Yeah.
You would. I thought cake of all eater. The people, you'd be like, you fucking cake eater.
Well, no, that's what I say about non-diabetics.
Right, yeah.
Bunch of cake eaters. I love it. I love the fat kid in goal. absolutely brilliant. I love that it's that's a body positive character. Yes, he's bigger than the rest of the kids. Stick him in goal. He's useful.
That is really funny. He's body positive. He's of use. Yeah, they don't say, get in shape. They go, if anything, eat more of that cake. Get in goal.
No, they're all really good. And I think there's some sort of early performances from actors who are still working to know what I say that. Joshua Jackson is one of the leads in Mighty Ducks, is one of the kids.
What is the film that you didn't think you would like, but you ended up loving?
Now, I wrote this answer down, and then I listened to James Acaster's episode of this, and he picked this film, but in a completely different category. So I'm just going to say it anyway. But this represents a type of film that I wouldn't normally go for because of the way it's presented in the poster, etc. And it's The Farewell.
Why did you think you wouldn't like this?
Because I tend to limit myself in the sorts of films I will go and see and push myself towards, because I love genre films. I love horror. I love sci-fi. I love anything like that. And I will rarely deliberately seek out a film that looks like it's going to be a bit sad or thinky. And the poster just bums me out for this film. It just looks like it's going to be so boring and I don't want to see it and blah, 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 blah. We're going to make this point. No, thank you. There's no explosions. There's no time loops. I don't care. But I forced myself to go and see it because I had some time to kill in London. And I thought it was just absolutely amazing. I was I was bawling afterwards. I thought it's such an incredible film that it's a point of view that I have never heard before. That, like, it's presented at the beginning of the film that they're, you know, they're lying to this this person about the fact that they're dying, but then it's seen as a good thing at the end, and you're completely on board with that point of view, and it's one that I've never heard before. And afterwards, I was like, God, maybe I am a thinky guy. Maybe I like a weepy thinker.
I think you are sad and thinky.
Yeah.
But you're in denial about it. I love The Farewell. And yeah, that point of when the cousin says to her, she's like, we have to tell the truth. And he goes, that's such a Western way of thinking. And it's only because you don't want the responsibility of taking her pain.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's...
It's proper. It's Pixar profound.
Yeah. Really sad thinky stuff.
I think it's probably one of the only films I've seen that has completely flipped my point of view on something. So yeah, probably that. And has it made me go and see more films that the poster puts me off? Probably not.
No. What is the single most erotic moment in a film?
Now, again, I wish I could give you an answer that's like, oh, it's this film where it's just eye contact and whoa, it's so erotic. You know what I find erotic? Real human connection. But I'll say 8 Mile when he fucks her in the factory.
That which also has eye contact and real human connection.
It does. But also you know the bit where it just goes in.
So you've got the single most erotic moment down to a second, to an actual second.
Yeah.
The bit where it goes in the factory in 8 Mile. That's specific.
And R.I.P.
And R.I.P. That is specific. Respect.
Thank you. Good film, don't
come up. Good film. Don't come up enough.
No.
That scene.
So to speak.
Don't come up enough. Which film you don't care about as a whole has a single sequence that you fucking love?
This was really easy. And I know you've only done one of these before, but this is going to come up a lot, I think. Because this came to me so quickly. It's the only thing it can be. It's the slow motion Evan Peters as Quicksilver scene in X-Men Days of Future Past.
Right.
All of the modern X-Men films, I'm not that on board with. I think they're fine. You know, I've seen them all. Days of Future Past is all right. It's better than Apocalypse. But there is the scene where he runs around the kitchen and just like touching stuff. He puts his headphones on. It all slows down. It's so beautifully shot. It looks absolutely amazing. Like he rearranges the bullets that people have fired, makes a man punch himself in the face. And he looks completely, there's this chaotic scene around him and he's completely at peace. And it just looks so beautiful. And then the payoff of it when everything speeds back up again is so good. It's like quite slapstick, quite good fun. And I love it. I absolutely love it. If you go onto YouTube, there's that scene on YouTube. It's had 62 million views, and that shows you that that scene is incredible, and it is a pearl in a sea of mundanity.
Wow. Okay.
Have you seen Brett?
Yeah. But I would have thought this. Listen, you already said in this, in Judgment Day, you already said, look at Annette. Take the opening sequence of Annette. You didn't like Annette, but you loved that fucking sequence at the beginning.
Yeah.
Maybe not as much as a man running around the kitchen.
But I think the comparison with Annette would be like, I think I loved it because I look back on it and I think I quite enjoyed it. And in comparison to how I felt about the rest of the film, I must have sort of readjusted how I feel about it. But that scene in the kitchen, oh boy. That's the only answer you're ever going to get, Brett, because it's the only true answer to that question.
Okay, well, let's see how we get on in the future with your positive affirmations to the future.
Also, I'm a bit worried we didn't talk about 8 Mile enough. You moved on from that quite quickly.
Oh, no, go on. What else you got to say?
Well, no, I just thought, what do you think about the bit where it goes in 8 Mile?
Yeah, I always like things going in. I think it's a great bit. I like 8 Mile. I don't know why he didn't do any more films after that, Eminem. I guess he just wanted to focus on his rapping because he's good in it.
But he didn't really focus on his rapping either because he's really good in 8 Mile. And I would have liked to have seen him do a little bit more. I suppose it's sort of the definitive film for him, right?
Yeah.
Did he win anything for that? Did he get nominated for an Oscar or anything?
I can't remember. I think I'm sure he won an MTV award.
For the bit where it goes in?
For the bit, yeah, best bit where it goes in award. They'll probably do that soon, because you know they always do Best Kiss. And usually the actors come on stage at the awards and kiss. I wonder if they've... As society collapses, they do best bit where it goes in, and then they do that on stage. I say collapses, maybe elevates.
Elevates when society truly reaches its full potential.
Yeah.
The MTV award for best bit where it goes in.
Where we lose all shame and just have happy people just putting it in on stage to celebrate movie making.
You'd host that awards, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You'd be the Ricky Gervais of the bit where it goes in awards. You got to get Goldstein in.
Just roasting
everyone. He absolutely roasts everyone on the way it goes in.
And then you see it go in and you realise, oh no, he only roasts the things he loves. What?
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
What is the film that stayed with you the longest after seeing it?
I'm going to say Existenz.
Great, great, great Existenz.
I absolutely love Existenz. And there's a specific bit where they're sort of going through the bones of an animal they've eaten and he makes a gun out of it that I think every time I eat a roast chicken, I think about that. Ever since the day I saw it, if I eat a roast chicken and I'm slicing the roast chicken and I see all the bones, I think, oh, remember that bit in Existenz where they build a gun out of the bones?
Have you ever tried? Have you ever used the leg bones in the shape of a gun and pretended to shoot at Charlie in the kitchen? Or do you not know how to do it?
Have you been spying on me? Well, no, because I wouldn't want to do that, because then that's already a sort of gun shape, right? The good thing about Existenz is everything clicks together like sort of Meccano, and they make this little gun out of it. And it's one of the... It's so weird. Like, all that Cronenberg sort of body horror weirdness, I think, is the stuff that sticks with you the most, because I have no idea where that idea came from in a brain. Who comes up with that?
Well, I think he was probably eating roast chicken with his hands. And he thought, because I thought that yesterday, I had a chicken leg. And yeah. I did think, yeah, it's the shape of a gun, isn't it? That's how it works. He's gone, it's the shape of a gun. And then he's gone, there's a film in that. Also, Existenz, is it one of the first films to use capital letters in the wrong place?
Quite possibly.
You know what
That's
I mean?
That's a great shout. Yeah. Is the X, is it the X and the Z capital?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's definitely the Z, and you're like, ooh. I think it might have led the been the leading the way on like text titles.
Yeah. It doesn't get talked about enough, Existenz, I think.
No.
I think it's a brilliant film. It's another like virtual reality sort of type genre film that I quite enjoy. Like you never know whether it's real or not. I like films where you never know whether it's real or not.
That's your genre.
Yeah.
What is the film? Here we go. It's a nice one. It's a nice one, Ed. What's the film that made you feel better about the world?
Oh, Mad Max Fury Road. Because there's two ways of thinking about this, Brett, isn't there?
Yeah.
You can either go, oh, this lovely film, aren't people good? Everyone looks after each other. Humans are basically decent when it comes down to it, and isn't love brilliant and love's love? Or you can think, oh, thank God we're not, our world's not like that. And that's how I feel about Mad Max Fury Road. I absolutely loved it. It's an incredible film. But I did come out of it going, oh, I don't think I could cope very well if it was like Mad Max Fury Road in real life.
Can you drive? Is it because you can't drive?
No, I can drive, and I'd love to. Right. I'd love a go on one of those trucks. I can't play guitar, sadly, so I couldn't be.
No,
I couldn't
be
that guy.
The front.
But I don't like the idea of, you know, fighting over water or although that horrible thing that's in charge. I don't like that one bit.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to go near the horrible thing in charge. No. But might be fun riding the trucks around the desert. Like, yes, you don't want to be strapped to the front of the truck playing guitar.
No,
sure. But if you're in the truck, it's got aircon, does it? We don't know.
No, it doesn't look like a world where there's aircon.
Yeah, you probably need a bit of water for that.
Yeah, I don't think there's aircon. I think, you know, everyone's fighting over water. It doesn't look like a nice world. It's fun to drop in and watch for a couple of hours, sure.
Yeah.
But do I want the world to be like that? Absolutely not. So you come out of watching a film like that and you look around and our world's in a complete tip, yes. But it's no Mad Max Fury Road, is it?
It's not Mad Max Fury Road. That's true. We don't have women chained up. What are they being milked for? Are they being milked? What's happening?
They're being milked. Yeah, they're being milked. Oh, horrible. Absolutely horrible.
Okay. Blah. What a great film, though.
What a great film. And it's the only answer to the question, what film made you feel better about the world?
Again.
You'll be getting that a lot.
I'll be getting that a lot, I'm sure. I'm absolutely sure that's going to keep popping up. Oh, I'm absolutely right, is it? This is the only one answer. It's such a good film. And Mark Kermode, for example, he's always show, don't tell. And
right.
Sometimes I'm like, yeah, but I really like dialogue. I quite like it when people talk.
I love
anyway,
to be told.
Please tell me what's going on. Mad Max Fury Road is a real masterpiece of storytelling that has almost no dialogue. And you really follow the story and it's really exciting and it just fucking goes and goes.
What does the script? Like, I wonder what the script looks like for a film like that.
I think
is it just heavy description? Oh, really? Okay.
I think he literally storyboarded shot by shot. He had it all. I think the script was like that. Was panels of like this is this with a couple of lines here and there. He
that
plays a guitar.
Sense. Yeah.
This
that makes sense because
it'd
be unreadable if it was like and then they get in the truck and they drive so fast. Just imagine it.
just imagine it is such a good script writing tip. Occasionally remind your reader to imagine it. Just imagine it. They stare at each other. Imagine it. It's intense in a way. Hopefully, depending on the performances and the lighting and whatnot.
Just imagine it.
Just imagine it.
When I write scripts, they always start with, now, you're not going to be able to see a lot of this because it's just on paper, but you're just going to have to imagine it.
You know, my friend, he used to say to me, he had an idea of like how to do stand-up and he said, you should open with saying, this will make you laugh before you tell your jokes. It's so funny.
It's like a Darren Brown trick. This will make you laugh. And then next thing you know, they're laughing and they don't know why.
This will make you laugh. Supermarkets, this will make you laugh. It's good. It's good stuff.
It's a good tip for a script. Also, a good thing to do is in like the directions for every line, you put acted well.
Yes.
So they know that it's going to be acted well.
What? Which is your favourite couple in a film?
Only one answer. Again, absolutely Jesus definitive. Christ. And I believe this to be the definitive answer. Mr. and Mrs. Potato Head.
From the tragic, tragic, heartbreaking quadrilogy, Toy Story 1, 2, 3 and 4.
Yeah, it's the only answer. They're the perfect couple. They're literally made for each other.
Why are they the perfect couple other than they fit together?
Just the back and forth between them. I love how caring she is for him. She packs his angry eyes. That might be one of my favourite lines in any film ever, about the angry eyes, packing his angry eyes in his backpack. I just think they're very comfortable with each other. There's just comfort, and they're back and forth. They're fun. They banter with each other. They're both potatoes. I think it's weird that they look so similar. I think it's weird when couples look quite similar, but I'm willing to get over that for Mr. and Mrs. Potato Head.
Happens a lot, doesn't it? When, in your wedding, which I couldn't come to, did you call your wife Mrs. Potato Head?
That's our middle names now. We've changed our middle names to Potato Head. I'm Edward Stevenson Potato Head Gamble.
Yeah, what about these couples that look alike?
That's weird, isn't it?
Well, is it narcissism? Is it like, yeah, you fancy a mirror? Is that what it is?
I think it must be. I think there must be an element of that, or caution, sort of subliminal caution, that if we have kids, I want to make sure they look exactly like me. So the best way of ensuring that is if the person I make the kid with already looks exactly like me.
Or is it maybe on a positive, is it safety? Is it like, well, they look like me and I'm safe, so they must be safe. Is that it?
Maybe.
Or is it just...
I mean, either way you look at it, it's not good, is it? I mean, Mr. and Mrs. Potato Head couldn't help it, I think. I think they were thrust together in Andy's room, right? So there's not really many options.
I think with Mr. and Mrs. Potato Head, it's a bit more sort of species dependent. Do you know what I mean? I don't think Mr. Potato Head can get with the T-Rex or a human. I think potato heads are for potato heads. And I'm not... I'm like, love is love. But I think, similarly to you having sex with a dog, I think if Potato Head had sex with the springy thing, it wouldn't be right. I think he can only be with Mrs. Potato Head.
Do you think that would be really frowned upon in Andy's room if, like, Mr. Potato Head got off with Bo Peep or something?
Yeah, I think there'd be, like, a meeting, and Woody would call a meeting and be like, guys, species dependent. Bo Peep can't fuck the slinky dog, all right? And Bo Peep's like, oh.
But...
What if no one's watching? What if Andy's out? It's not about Andy, this. This is about us. We're all here.
If Mr. Potato Head got off with Bo Peep, say, or Woody,
would it be
Woody or Bo Peep who are in the wrong there? Because Mr. Potato Head's a potato, or is the fact he's a sentient potato?
Because of the circle of life.
Yeah.
That's a great question. In the way that, you know, like, yeah, people who do bestiality say that the horse was into it or whatever. You mean like that? Mm. And you're like, well, the horse can't speak. So Mr. Potato Head can speak. So if Mr. Potato Head is saying, no, I really wanted to have sex with Woody.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I would bring that to Andy if I was running the toys. I'd be like, Andy, look, oh, full disclosure, we're alive and we can talk. Sorry, I should have.
So just get that out of the way first.
We were never going to reveal this, but something's come up. Woody and Mr. Potato Head have had sex. They both say they wanted it. Mr. Potato Head, as you know, is sentient. Sorry, you just found out. You're probably still in shock. But anyway, Mr. Potato Head's like, hello. And Woody's just shaking his head like, couldn't we have kept this? I'm like, shh, Andy, is it okay that they had sex, or do we have to lock up Woody or Potato Head? What does Andy say?
I think, to be honest, Andy's going to be so shocked that his... toys are talking to him. For a start, I think he's going to stamp on them until they're dead. I think that he's going to panic if his toys start speaking to him, and he's going to try and kill them. I think definitely.
See, because they're existing in a Pixar film called Toy Story, but from Andy's point of view, he's now suddenly in child's play.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's terrifying.
Yeah.
Especially if you find out your toys can talk and they've been doing stuff while you've been out the room, and then also they're asking you whether it's okay for a potato to fuck a woman.
Yeah, or a cowboy.
Or a cowboy.
Yeah.
Does Mr. Potato Head have like a dick and a butthole in his backpack that he can take around with him?
The worst thing is, just thinking it through, I'm thinking he's using his nose, just in a different position. I think he's popping that on the undercarriage. and you know, and sticking it in Woody's drawstring, probably.
Yeah.
I'm now thinking Woody's the victim, if there is one. Listen, yeah. I hope there was.
I think they're all, it's consensual, right?
So, yeah, it's yeah. fine.
It's fine.
Okay, well, that's Toy Story 5 taken care of. Thank you. We'll we'll wait for your... Just imagine it. We'll wait for the call.
Just imagine it.
What film inspired you, Ed Gamble, to do something?
Three Ninjas and Three Ninjas High Noon at Mega Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have cool names that they give themselves, like ninja names. And me and my friend Henry Bott watched that when we were in school. And so we decided to give ourselves really cool names.
Was the name you gave him Henry Bott?
No. That was his real name. He already had a cool name.
Okay.
Henry Bott and Ed Gamble, best friends forever. Not spoken to him in a while. So we decided to give ourselves cool names. And we really pushed them as well. So the next day at school, we were out loud calling each other these names so everyone else would pick up on them. And then it felt quite weird, so we did ditch them after a while. He was Hands and I was Blade.
I mean, Blade, I get. Hands?
Because he wanted to be like known for a thing. And I think he wanted to be good, known for good sort of like karate work and catching stuff. And Blade, I just thought sounded cool.
Karate and catching. Did Henry Bott, I don't know if you want to be called Hands, like Hands.
Yeah.
Handsy. Henry Bott was Handsy and you carried a blade.
Hands and Blade. Also, if you say Hands, it just sounds like you're talking to like a German guy, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't quite work. So I think they only lasted a day, really, that we were Hands and Blade. But that's genuinely the only film that's inspired me to do anything.
Did anyone else come, you know, on that journey with you, Hands and Blade?
No, we were quite insular, quite an insular friendship. No one else had watched Three Ninjas. No one was as cool as us.
Will you send Henry Bott a text now saying you miss him?
No, I don't think I will do that. Okay. He lives in Vietnam, so I don't know what the time difference is.
Best friends forever.
Best friends forever. Hands and Blade.
Hands and Blade.
What would your ninja name be, Brett?
Jumpy.
Jumpy?
Yeah, I'd like to be known for jumping, really. Yeah, because you've got... Listen, we're going to have to be a team, right? Us and Henry Bott. We've already got Blades taken care of. We've got someone good with their hands. You need Jumpy.
You need Jumpy as well. But it's amazing that Jumpy is... Yeah, you didn't go with like Frog or something.
Jump. Jump would have been probably tougher.
Jump would have been better than Jumpy.
But he's Jumpy.
Jumpy sounds like something a kid would call a jumper.
So,
can Bretty put on his Jumpy?
You say that, but when we're trying to get up a building, who's at the top first? Jumpy over here.
Yeah, Jumpy's
Jumpy's up
there.
Going up. He's dropping down the rope. Hands is pulling himself up his hands. You're hacking your way up the wall.
Yeah, with my blades. But we all eventually get there, and that's why we're a good team. Jumpy, Blades and Blade and Hands.
The makers of Three Ninjas called us for the reboot. Thank you so much. We're fucking making money on this pod.
Yeah, man.
Well, Ed Gamble, we've reached the end. And I have to weigh up your good deeds and your bad. Yes, you married your wife. Also, you relentlessly cheated on her. But you had some good thoughts on films, particularly The Truman Show. I can't yet decide. We're on a knife edge. You can offer to give me one film that is meaningful to you in the hope that I will spare you. Then I will make my decision. What is it, Ed Gamble?
So how meaningful does it have to be to me?
Or should I say Blade?
Please give me my full name, Blade Potato Head Gamble. meaningful's tricky, really, isn't it? So I'm just going to have to go with a film I saw recently and I really liked it. The Vavitch.
It's really good.
It's absolutely brilliant. I couldn't believe I hadn't seen it until recently. I love heavy metal, and I think it's the most heavy metal film available.
Explain.
Occult, darkness, just pure horror, I think. I don't think there's much feeling in that film. Ooh. I think it's quite raw, and I really enjoyed it. And Finchie's in it.
Finchie's very good. Is that why you love heavy metal? No feeling. Is that your description of it?
No, it depends what mood I'm in. I quite like sort of very aggressive, like grindcore, horrible stuff, which is just like straight ahead, rumbling riffs, sort of buzzsaw riffs sometimes, and screaming and and blast beats and all of that stuff. And that's what that film reminded me of. Just straight out the gates, absolute horrific stuff. That black goat. Oh man, that goat. Maybe I want to play the goat in a film. Maybe I should have been the goat. Answer. I should have said that earlier for the character I most want to play in a film.
Why do you like that stuff?
Because I respect that artistic decision to just go for it, to just really go for it and have that. And I like films with just insane final scenes as well, like
it's
that
a great
and
ending.
Kill List and any film like that that just has just builds to, same with Hereditary as well, just builds to just like absolute full insanity. And you don't know how you got there from the start of the film. Like if you showed someone the first scene and the last scene of those films, you'd be like, what the fuck happened in the middle?
Yeah. Oh, Ed. I guess I've got to make a decision. Edward Stevenson Blade Potato Head Gamble. Based on your thoughtful hot takes and answers and vibes, I'm going to send you to heaven. Hooray. You made it.
Yes.
Unless I decide on a fourth part and bring you back to life to kill you again. We'll see. Enjoy yourself in heaven. You're a good boy, actually. Big, strong, good boy. Loves
Brett,
talking about...
I mean, of course, of course you're going to decide on a fourth part because, look, I listened to this podcast and I listened to the episode where you said, well, you know, it's probably about time for me to take some time off, actually. I'm really busy. And then there wasn't a gap. Just carried on.
It was a whole month. A whole month. I'm so tired. Ed Gamble, is there anything you would like to tell people to look for, listen to, or follow, or eat? Coming up.
Depends. I'm on tour from September. Depending on when this comes out. Well, no, I'm always on tour from September, but... same show as I was touring at the beginning of the year. So I'm back on tour, extended the tour.
Amazing.
Doing that. So just come and see me on tour. Listen to Off Menu with James Acaster and listen to the Radio X show that I do with Matthew Crosby. Listen to that as well. Listen to the Taskmaster podcast and that'll do.
Okay.
Yeah?
Yeah. I love you.
I love you too, man.
I don't mind saying it.
I hope this was a good podcast.
I think this was the best of the trilogy, much like Lethal Weapon 3.
Yes.
Thank you. Good man. Have a wonderful time in Edinburgh.
Thank you, Brett.
And enjoy heaven. I'll stop the recording. Good day to you. So.
Love you. Bye.
Love you. So that was episode 212. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein for all the extra stuff with Ed. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you're all doing very well. Thank you, Ed, for his time. Thanks to Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to Acast for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics and Lisa Lydon for the photography. Come and join me next week for another banging guest. So that's it for now. But in the meantime, have a lovely week and please be excellent to each other.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Brett, sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more. Online and on campuses across the globe to make films alongside industry professionals. Explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett.
Thank you, Maureen.